Welcome to the podcast. I'm Angela Beaubier, and this is Life in the Talbot Settlement, brought to you by Tyrconnell Heritage Society, operators of Bacchus Page House Museum. In this series, we will do our best to give you a full appreciation of the history of Western Elgin County in southwestern Ontario, from First Nations to the early settlers to the 1950s. Sit back, relax, and enjoy. Before we begin, I'd like to acknowledge funding from Tyrconnell Heritage Society, operators of Bacchus Page House Museum. Welcome to episode 34. In today's episode, we'll be talking about the preservation of food through the ages. Before we begin, I'd like to acknowledge funding from the Department of Canadian Heritage and Tyrconnell Heritage Society, operators of Bacchus Page House Museum. Canning is a process where food is placed in cans or jars and is heated to kill microbes and enzymes. This heating and then cooling seals the food in a vacuum and prevents other bacteria, mold, or pathogens from contaminating the food. In 1795, Napoleon Bonaparte offered a reward of 12,000 francs for whomever could develop a safe food preservation method to feed his army on the march. Nicolas Appert developed a method that involved heating the food jars, which were reinforced with wire and sealed with wax, and was given the reward in 1809. The first use of tin for canning was introduced in 1810 by Peter Durand. The first glass jar with airtight properties used for home canning was the mason jar, which used rubber rings and metal clamps, and patented in 1858. These gained in popularity and widely used during the U.S. Civil War between 1861 and 1865. In 1868, John Mason invented a glass container with a screw-on thread molded into its top and sealed with a rubber seal. Other industry leaders were William Charles Ball, and in 1915, Alexander Kerr developed the metal lid with a permanently attached gasket, and the modern two-piece canning lid was born. Now let's talk about jams and jellies. Honey and sugar were very powerful preservatives. Fruits kept in honey were commonplace in ancient Greece, and the Romans used honey to preserve the texture of their food. Pickled foods came to the West from the Far East. In northern climates where there's no sunlight to dry fruits adequately, preserves were made by heating fruit with sugar. Refrigeration and freezing are probably the most popular forms of food preservation in use today. In refrigeration, bacterial action is slowed to a crawl so that it takes food much longer to spoil. When frozen, bacterial action is stopped altogether by keeping the enzymes inactive only for the duration it's frozen. In primitive times, like 500 BCE, one of the earliest forms of refrigeration was an ice house. These were used to store ice, which was cut from nearby bodies of water. When the temperatures fell, cellars, caves, and cold streams were used to increase the storage time of food. Ice houses were originally a hole dug into the ground and a building constructed over top. Once the ground was frozen, it was filled with ice. The pit may be lined with mortar or stone, and the building probably double plank walls, filled with an insulating material like wood shavings, straw, leaves, or bark. Food could also be stored in the ice house, or ice was brought into the cellar to aid in refrigeration. In the 1740s, the first artificial refrigeration was invented by Scottish scientist William Cullen. He showed how the rapid heating of a liquid to a gas can result in cooling. This principle is still used today. In 1802, American Thomas Moore created an icebox to cool dairy for transportation. His refrigerator was patented in 1803. In 1834, inventor Jacob Perkins, an American living in London, England, built the first working vapor compression refrigeration system. In the 1840s, the first ice boxes were made by carpenters and designed to take advantage of regular delivery of large blocks of ice. The boxes were insulated with a lining of tin or zinc. After World War I, in 1918, William Durant mass-produced refrigerators for his Frigidaire company. It was followed by the Kelvinator company, whose refrigerators featured an automatic temperature control. By 1927, General Electric introduced their first refrigerator to widespread use. By the mid-1930s, most homes were getting a refrigerator, at the cost of $1,000 US. In the 1940s, refrigerators came with separate freezer compartments to store the mass-produced frozen foods that were new. By 1950, more than 90% of households had an electric refrigerator. Then focus turned to design with colors and a variety of shapes and sizes. Another process for preserving food is fermentation. It's the process of converting carbohydrates to alcohol or organic acids using microorganisms, yeast, or bacteria under anaerobic conditions. Fermentation usually implies that the action of microorganisms is desired. Natural fermentation precedes human history. The earliest archaeological evidence of fermentation is 13,000-year-old residues of a beer found in a cave near Haifa in Israel. Another early alcoholic drink made from fruit, rice, and honey dates from 7,000 to 6,600 BCE in the Neolithic Chinese village of Jiahu. And I apologize if I'm saying any of these towns or villages incorrectly. Winemaking dates from about 6,000 BCE in Georgia in the Caucasus area. The French chemist Louis Pasteur founded zymology when in 1856 he connected yeast to fermentation. When studying the fermentation of sugar to alcohol using yeast, Pasteur concluded that the fermentation was catalyzed by a vital force called ferments within the yeast cells. There are three basic forms of fermentation. Lactic acid, when yeasts and bacteria convert starches and sugars into lactic acid in foods like sauerkraut, kimchi, pickles, yogurt, and sourdough bread. Second is ethyl alcohol, where pyruvate molecules in starches or sugars are broken down by yeasts into alcohol and carbon dioxide molecules, and they produce wine, beer, and mead. Lastly, we have acetic acid. That's when starches or sugars from grains or fruit changes into sour-tasting vinegar and condiments, such as apple cider vinegar and apple cider. Salting is also a method of preserving food that was common before modern refrigeration. Salting preserves food by drawing the water out, preventing bacteria growth and spoilage of the food. The food is surrounded in salt and left in a cool, dry place. To preserve meat or fish with dry salting, the meat is cut into small pieces and layered with the salt. Salting can be hastened when the meat and salt mix is placed in the sun. One of the most ancient methods of preserving food is the use of salt. Beginning in the 20th century, dry salting was replaced with curing for most meats. Curing takes place when salt is mixed with nitrates, and this speeds the preservation process and uses less salt. When the meat is cured, it is often softer and less dry. The addition of nitrates also keeps meat red in color instead of the gray color when dry salting is done. Bacon, ham, and jerky are examples of curing. But brining also uses salt, but in liquid form. The food to be preserved is submerged in the liquid, or the liquid can be injected into the meat. The salt concentration, mixed with the meat, is then sealed into a container until the meat is fully preserved. Brining is most often used to preserve vegetables, but also will keep fresh eggs for up to a whole year. While brining uses salt, pickling adds in acids, such as vinegars, and often includes herbs and spices to add flavor. Cucumbers, broccoli, cauliflower, kipperfish, and eggs are often pickled. Now let's talk about drying. That's the process of preserving food by removing the water from it. When you remove the water, the growth of the microorganisms is stopped and decay is prevented. Drying was the earliest and simplest way to preserve food. Archaeologists have discovered sun-dried food as far back as 12,000 BCE. These ancient peoples dried all kinds of food, from meats and fish to a variety of fruits and vegetables. The method was simple. Food was just laid out on wood planks or hung on lines until all the water was removed. Trappers and explorers in early North America encountered First Nations who ate pemmican. Pemmican was a dried meat, pounded, mixed with fruits and lard to make an early version of granola. In about 200 BCE, the Egyptians developed the use of salt as a preservative. This was a faster method and soon replaced the older method of just sun drying. Modern dehydration was developed during the US Civil War. Food items were placed in containers and dehydrated by use of hot air. This allows for the preservation of large amounts of foods to be used by an army on the march. Recipe books such as Mrs. Beaton's Book of Household Management, published in 1861, gives instructions on dehydrating food for the modern housekeeper. In the early 20th century, food dehydration moved from military to home use. Rationing during both world wars required the storage of food as it became available, and homemakers learned to dry food in their ovens. Today's dehydrators come in a variety of shapes and sizes, most with temperature controls and timers to allow most any kind of food to be dried and stored for later use. Freeze-drying was invented in 1906 by French inventor Arsène d'Arsonval. Food was frozen, ice turns into vapor, and the microbes don't grow. Freeze-dried foods are dehydrated first, requiring less space for storage and transportation. They do need to be rehydrated before consumption, though, and shouldn't be eaten in their dehydrated condition. Now, smoking of food is divided into either cold smoking or hot smoking. The temperature of cold smoking is below 80 degrees Fahrenheit, or 27 degrees Celsius, and merely injects smoke into the product without denaturing the proteins, for example, salmon and other types of fish. In hot smoking, the foods are cooked between 160 to 225 degrees Fahrenheit, or 71 to 110 degrees Celsius, and the proteins are thoroughly cooked through. First Nations people in the Northwest smoked fish by hanging them from racks above an open fire. Now, something that settlers had to have when they arrived in our area, which we call the Talbot Settlement, is a root cellar. It's a structure usually underground or partially underground used to store vegetables, fruits, nuts, and other foods. Early root cellars, which were often called larders, were constructed under the house, near the house, or into a hillside. Perishables such as fruits and vegetables would be kept cool to be eaten after the growing season. Winters in Ontario were too severe to leave fruits and vegetables outdoors, and settlers were advised to excavate a small cellar with a trapdoor in the floor. This would be large enough to hold 20 or 30 bushels of potatoes and a barrel or two of pork, and be accessible for provisions to be used in the preparation area of the kitchen. Depth and shape of the pit and items stored varied depending on the owner and their crops. Most pits were square or rectangular with plain dirt walls and a hard packed floor. Sometimes wood lined the walls and shelves were built as needed. Some barns also had pits dug underneath floors to keep dairy products cool and store root crops for animal fodder. Fruits like apples would be placed in a box or barrel with straw, sawdust, or leaves surrounding each piece. This prevented spoilage, as the high level of carbon dioxide inhibits ripening and the lower oxygen level discourages bacteria and molds. Bacchus Page House Museum is built on a sand knoll, and food may also have been buried in sand in the cellar instead of in boxes or barrels. Yeast would be stored in wood or earthen containers. Preserves in glass or china. Butter needs to be kept cool, and cheese needs air to circulate around it, so wooden shelves were necessary. Parsnips are best covered in sand, excluding all air. And cabbages and potatoes hold up well in cellars and will be packed in barrels or boxes with the outside leaves still attached. And often damp moss would be wrapped around the vegetables for even better storage. A root house is not internal to the house or the barn, and was built instead of or in addition to a root cellar. It's a pit dug 6 to 8 feet deep, roofed with logs which are covered then in earth. This preserves root crops from frost and may be the first form of storage for settlers until a more permanent home was built. We hope you've learned a little bit about the history of food preservation and found our episode interesting. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you in a couple weeks. Please share the podcast with your friends and follow us on all social media platforms at Bacchus Page House. The Bacchus Page House Museum and Turkanal Heritage Society acknowledges the land we are on today as the traditional territory of First Nations people. As settlers at a settler-focused museum, we value both the significant historical and contemporary contributions of all original peoples and ask how we can be supportive in Indigenous cultural renewal. Life in the Talbot Settlement is a production of Turkanal Heritage Society, operators of Bacchus Page House Museum. Your host has been Angela Bobier, music provided by Jack Whitmer, and thanks to our producer, Caitlin Rietzma. To make a charitable donation, become a Turkanal Heritage Society member, and to contact the Bacchus Page House Museum, please visit our website, www.bacchuspagehouse.ca. Thank you again for listening.